discuter de tout ça.
Hello.
Hello, hello, hello.
Give me 1 second to change the mic.
And are you there?
Headphones. Yep, I'm there. Can you hear me?
I can't hear nothing.
Oh, boy. Can you hear me now?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Ah, very good.
You've got the Nights and Weekends podcast with your hosts, Craig Hewitt and Ken Wallace. We're building real businesses, baby. Go pour yourself a drink and pop in those earbuds. We've got work to do.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I was hoping Craig could join us today, but he had a prior commitment. But, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with his journey with Podcast Motor, but it's productized consulting.
Yeah. Podcast Motor is very cool.
Yeah.
The only reason I don't use it is my business partner used to be a content producer at the Onion's AV Club.
Right.
And he was the one who edited their first podcast. So because of that, I've got, you know, a free good podcast editor.
Right. That's the biggest hurdle Craig finds is people that have an ingrained system. But he's running into hurdles where it's not at all clear to him how to scale a productized consulting service. For instance, like, let's talk about Craig. He's sending out emails, cold emails to people saying, hey, I can produce your podcast for you.
No, that's a great way to do it. No, that's how I test all of my ideas. It's just someone has a thing, I do it. I'm like, you know what? This would be repeatable and good and easy. And then you don't feel bad about charging for it because it works out to like a much higher hourly rate.
Right.
Because you've done it so many times, you're good at it.
Yes.
So like, you know, someone wanted marketing help. So I said, okay, let's try Facebook ads. And I really hadn't had much experience with it. I tried it for myself. It worked fine. Like, let's apply it to e-commerce. And I charged them very little to do it. And it worked well. I said, okay. And I did it again. And I charged a little more, got a little more complicated. And I just kept going up until I found the sweet spot, but got, you know, better, faster, and charging more each time. So the advantage to productized consulting is you're moving along a curve where, you know, the time you put into it's going down and the price you're charging for is going up. So it just gets more and more profitable every time. No, that's an interesting thing. Yeah, I never did, you know, I foolishly quit my job with no plan. And I was like, all right, let's go freelance and start on our own and just try things until they worked.
Right.
You know, and when you're in your mid-20s and you don't have kids and a wife, you can get away with that.
Well, let's talk about your journey because I want to know how you go from basically, I'm going to say a freelancer, and correct me if that's not a good description, to...
That's probably true.
You're probably one of the most systemized, buttoned-up, productized people I've ever read about and know anything about. It's just like, you're kind of like the holy grail of freelancing here. So I want to know, was there like... was there an epiphany? Did you wake up one day and say, you know what? I bet I can do this differently and make it a whole lot more scalable. Or, you know, walk me through that journey.
Okay. So day one was 2009, early 2009, I believe. And I put on my shoes to go to work. I was working as a product manager, as an e-commerce dropshipping company. I put on my shoes and I started crying. And that was scary. That was a wake-up call.
Yeah.
That the idea of putting on my shoes to go to work made me cry. So that day I quit with no plan. And I had a very good friend of mine who'd lost his job but had fun employment, and he was a very good developer. So I'm like, we should start a thing because we're both smart and talented. I don't know what it is. And he said, let's do that. And so we decided to do a SaaS business with no experience, and that was an awful idea.
Right.
But after, you know, during that time, we had people saying, you know, misunderstanding what we did and coming up to our door because we had our office then because, again, we were doing everything wrong. And they would say, hey, can you help me with my website? Because they didn't understand what we were doing. And I'd say, no, let me go back to toiling for no money.
Right.
And one day I thought, wait a second, I could do those projects and make money. So essentially, I, by accident, fell into small local business website development.
Okay.
And that went on, you know, I got good at selling that and everything. I had zero experience. Everything was really a trial by fire, but it always worked out. We were good at it. And eventually I said, okay, I finally figured out, you know what? We need to pick a niche. And I knew two things. We'd gotten lucky and had some big agency projects where we'd done WordPress development and they had big budgets, anywhere from like 20 to 60 grand. And it got us some big names to put in our portfolio, like Verizon and the NFL. So I said, okay, I'm going to pick two positionings. I'm going to do, you know, our agency website, ethercycle.com, is going to be focused on development, outsourced development for creative agencies. And our, but then at the same time, I still want to serve local businesses. So let's go, we like Shopify the best for local businesses. So let's just do Shopify for them. And you know what? We'll make a product around that. Because we'd had people who had Shopify stores, and we're like, hey, I want to refresh the website, but I don't have a big budget. I said, well, actually, we could do that. You know, we'll just, a front-end developer and I, we'll sit down for 2 hours, and we'll just keep, we'll make successive code changes until the thing looks like a much improved website.
Okay.
And that's actually where we got the idea for Website Rescues, where we packaged it up, and it worked well. And we were just trying both. And I was succeeding at both. The issue was, the Shopify projects were fast and easy and low budget, but they're way more profitable and much more satisfying because you're dealing directly with the client and you could see what the very easily what the result was.
Right.
Versus with agencies, it was incredibly stressful. Like it was always late nights and rush deadlines and you know everything was it was very stressful.
Yes.
So we said, you know what, we're not going to do that anymore. So we wrapped up our last project and said, we're just going to focus on Shopify.
That's fantastic.
So I think, what I found when coaching people is I always say, okay, you got to pick, you have to have strong positioning, pick a good niche. And that just paralyzes people having to make that choice. And what they don't realize is, A, you can change it at any time you want. It's your business. Do what you want to do. So change it at any time. Like it's just, it's an H1 on a web page. It doesn't matter. You
right.
can change it. It's okay to try different things. Like I had different landing pages for different things and you just kind of throw stuff at the wall, see what sticks. Like there wasn't anything, some great revelation. It was just trying things and said, hey, what are we happy doing? And it just so happened that it was Shopify and specifically let's work on existing Shopify stores to improve them. And it just, and then once we had focused down to, all right, let's only do that. Then again, you just get progressively better when you're only doing, you're working in this little area, you get really good at it. Like, yeah, I've got this tiny sandbox, but you know what? I'm the best in this sandbox.
Yeah, I totally appreciate that. Just at our day job, we struggle with this. We like to think that we're niched down and we have a specific specialty. But at the end of the day, when customers come to us with money they're willing to spend, we do listen and we have to reaffirm our niche to ourselves. It's like, well, boy, this is tough. We got a customer that walked in today. And by the way, in my day job, we work on major, it's usually the minimum is a six-figure engagement to do back-end systems that integrate with an Oracle system or SQL Server installation to help manage product data. It's not sexy. It's not usually customer-facing. It's usually B2B work. So if we have a customer that comes in and wants to sell, say, five different designs of T-shirt, that's not a good fit for us because we, that's not what we're organized to be good at. You know, we've had people that come in with something like that, but and they're really insistent, and it's like, yeah, but you guys make websites. And, I talked to some other past customer of yours and she was very happy. And I just want what you did for her. Why can't you just do this for me? And then so there's the soul searching moment of, well, why can't I? She's got money. She wants to pay for a website. We make websites. It seems like there's not a disconnect here. And you have to keep reaffirming that. No. Why don't you just go to Shopify and put your shirts up for sale or Etsy or so many other places are on the net today where you could sell a SKU,
Exactly. One and item. Actually, yeah, I struggled with this too because it's, someone shows up and says, hey, my money's green. Why won't you take it? And you have to say, well, no, we're not the best fit for this.
Right.
And that creates a lot of frustration for people. But at the end of the day, I'm just a guy and I don't want to have stress in my life. And one of those ways is to not take on projects where I know I'm going to do anything less than my best.
Right.
And if it's anything less than that, then I know it's not in the best interest of the client or myself. So I'll either, right up front, turn them away. If I could tell, if someone says like, hey, could you build this WordPress website for me? I say, unfortunately, no. And I don't want to make it about them because that, it offends people. So I say, I don't have the time for that, and I'm probably not the best fit for it. But here, I still want to support you in a different way. Here's two or three other people you could talk to, and I wish you the best of luck. And I've had people thank me. They're like, oh, thank you for your honesty and the referral. I appreciate it. Because when you rephrase it like that, where you're like, I'm doing a thing that's in your best interest, it helps them.
Hmm.
And then, so, you know, we'll get stuff like that. Or we'll get people where it's like, I don't feel good about your product. Or, you know, the worst is you do a kickoff call and you realize, like, the person's personality isn't a good fit for you.
Right.
And that one's rough. So that's only happened twice where I've said, hey, you know, I've refunded after the kickoff call. I realize I'm not the best fit for this. And I know it's frustrating and sudden, but I've refunded your deposit in full. Here's a screenshot showing it refunded. It'll hit your account in 5 days. And, you know, I'm really sorry it didn't work out, but I know from experience it's best to end a project before it starts than have it, you know, go part way and have a bad end.
People usually, at the end of the day, maybe not right then in the moment, but at the end of the day, they do respect candor like that.
Yeah, that's another thing I want to, yeah, just like, I have to be brutally honest always, but just couch it in and be mismanners. You know, just really very, like when you put it like just really polite and in your best interest, then people, they handle it well. And even if they're annoyed later, they'll be like, okay, they were right. And he handled it well.
That's fantastic advice. I've had even my project that I'm starting, Mastermind Jam, I've had people that contacted me as they're going through the onboarding process and they're just not a good fit. They don't understand it. They don't like the way I've done it. And they want to change everything that they've ever seen about my product. It's like, well,
it's like, okay, then it's not for you. Go elsewhere.
Yeah. It's like, I'm sorry, this isn't just working out for you. So here's your $50 back. Or for a lot of people, it was free. And yet I've gotten 20 emails from them asking, you know, why I did something a certain way. And it's like, you know, thanks for your, it's really tough in the moment to be polite, you know? So usually I have to step away and I've said it over and over again. I do value the feedback, but you know, in the first moment, it does hurt a little bit.
A good one I got, you know, when you're dealing with, you know, some of those things, I get emails like that, and sometimes they approach like the level of, like they approach a level where you're like, are you trolling me?
Yeah.
So the best way to deal with those is to deflect and go, oh, why do you think that is? Just to ask just simple questions, be like, hey, thanks for that note. Why do you think that is? Ask them to explain their reasoning, and they're like, that just ends it.
Right.
Always. No one ever explains.
Yeah.
And if they did, you have the satisfaction of knowing they had to write you like a one-page letter. And then you say, okay, well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. And then it gets filed. You know,
it goes in the archive.
I've got tons of valuable feedback. I'm not going to discount feedback.
Feedback's good. You just get stuff that's like, what's your problem?
You're right. Yeah. It goes beyond feedback to just, it's personal preference, right? And somebody
right.
gets really
and they
annoyed.
Don't separate that where they're like, my preference is the right way to do it and everyone needs to do it that way. It's like,
yeah.
No, that's just what you think.
Yeah, things like aesthetics. Why is your button this color? You know?
Yeah, that drives me crazy. Yeah, I have to be like, all right, take a breath and then respond politely.
Yeah.
No, a perfect example is, you know, my newsletter, I'm always encouraging people to respond. I do two newsletters. I got one for Shopify clients, one for freelancers. And a newsletter is really just like, here's free advice to keep me top of mind. And if at some point you want to engage with me, go ahead. Like, that's all I'm doing. And I had two just unsolicited, here, have some advice. And one was a woman who said, hey, sometimes I get your emails and I forget who you are and what you do. So maybe you should explain it. So I said, you know what? That's good advice. And I stuck my positioning statement as a part of the signature in every email. Like, good advice.
Yeah.
And then another thing I'm always doing is just to keep the list healthy and not to annoy people. I often encourage people to unsubscribe. I'm like, hey, if you're not getting value out of this, if you don't want to hear from me again, go ahead and unsubscribe. Just go ahead. And because, like, what's the point? Why would you want people who don't want to hear from you on an email list?
That's right.
And I had a guy in the very first email I send to people, I do that. I'm like, listen, you can, like, here's your free PDF. And if you want to, you can unsubscribe right now and keep your PDF or do nothing. And I'm going to send you another email tomorrow. Like, I want their permission. I want to be polite. And I had a guy reply. He's like, word of advice, you probably don't want to suggest people unsubscribe in your email list. You should split test that, winky face. Like, ugh. So that one I replied. I was like, well, actually, I'm like, I appreciate that. I understand why you think that. But, you know, I really like keeping the list clean. I don't want to be spamming people. I don't want them getting emails they don't want. So you'll find that as this course goes on, that you're going to be encouraged to unsubscribe probably two or three times more. And, you know, So it was a real explanation. It was polite. I sent it to him, and I never heard from him again. But he did stay on the list.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah. And but really, I mean, I kind of like, if people are disengaged, I've got another thing set up. Like, if someone hasn't opened my last 10 emails, they just get automatically unsubscribed. I have that set up as an automation rule in Drip. But it feels like kicking losers out of your house party. Like, your newsletter, it is a free thing. It takes me a ton of time to set up. It's great, valuable content, and I'm giving it away completely for free. So it's my house party, and if you're on the list, you are there voluntarily. And as my guest, please behave yourself.
Hey, and specifically about that, I've thought about doing that. And, you know, obviously my list is probably minuscule compared to your list, but I do see the open rates. And I've often wondered, because I use a service, unroll.me.
Okay.
And it shows me a brief screenshot of the email contents. Does that count as an open? Looks at it?
It would have, if there's images in there, it would have to, because any read tracking is just like there's a 1x1 pixel spacer GIF in there, and when it hits the GIF that says, okay, that was read.
Cool. All right. I've often wondered that because I was hesitant to unsubscribe people that just simply are using an organization service like that.
At the same time, I'll think about it, like, let's say, so I do 10 emails. So that's, and I said, let's assume I send one every week. That's 2.5 months.
Right.
In 2.5 months, even if they're using a service like that, there's like not a chance they open it on an iPad, an iPhone, in their inbox. Like if they open it anywhere else, I mean, it's going to show it as red.
Right.
So that's why I went with 10.
That's a good number. I'm going to do that. I'm totally copying that.
Yeah. And the other thing, like I stopped, you know, in the beginning I worried about list size and I stopped obsessing about it. When I realized, like, the important thing is just engagement. And those, like, your open rate, your click-through rate, your response rate, you're going to get a much clearer, better perspective on those when you have a cleaner list. So, kick the losers out of your house party.
Yeah, if you have two people in your list and one of them opens, it's like that 50% open rate hurts a lot, right?
Yeah.
But, okay, you know, speaking of the list size, the one area it does matter is motivation. I can't help but say this. You know, I've been putting out some blog posts, mastermindjam.com/blog, and I'm not seeing any uptick in subscribes. You know, and I do in my emails to on my list, I tell people, you know, if you're no longer interested in this content, you know, feel free to unsubscribe at the bottom of this email. And so if out of, 100 people or 200 people, one person unsubscribes, I feel it. It's like really personal. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, okay. Another thing, for sure, turn off the unsubscribe notifications.
That's probably the best advice I've gotten all week.
I did that. I found I've mentioned that to other people with big lists. And I think a lot of people turn off the unsubscribe notifications because it's demoralizing.
Right. Yes, it totally is. I've got two lists, right? I've got a general email newsletter kind of thing. And then I've got another list that is people who have opted into the matching service, right? And in a very real way, that email subscription is the start of the onboarding funnel.
Right.
So if any step of the process, like they sign up, they fill out their profile, they pay the fee, if at any step of the way they've changed their mind, I have to know this because I have a manual process that now I have to go to this other system that runs on my desktop, pull them out of the matching algorithm, and then also in some cases give them a refund or, you know, variety of other tasks that have to happen if I see that unsubscribe. So for that one, I can't really turn it off, but for, until I automate it, that is, but for the other list, I'm certainly going to shut that off.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like, you're just getting slapped randomly every time you see those.
Right. Especially,
I don't like it.
You know, just the unsubscribe too, because it just starts your brain working. It's like, why did they unsubscribe? I don't see a reason why here. I just, you know, did I offend them? Did I take too long? is this content content not relevant anymore? Huh. Interesting. Yeah.
So I'm looking at your blog content.
Yes.
At the end of the blog article, why don't you just have a little newsletter sign up down there?
That's a good point.
I did that. Like, that's how, you know, I struggled for a while to get my list going. And that was, I did that. That helped a lot. And then exit intent pop-ups with Drip works well.
Yeah, there's the welcome gate kind of thing that is at the top. I
saw that. I like the style of it. It's very cool. Oh, yeah, and I just saw there is an exit intent pop-up, I think. How do I make the gate pop open again?
It's one of those King Sumo plugins, so it's designed not to spam you with it too much.
All right, I'll open it incognito window. It's going to come up then.
That should do it. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's loading. It's loading.
Are you saying my blog is slow?
There it goes.
It could very well be slow.
It could also be my Comcast at home is kind of spotty. Oh, like okay. Sometimes the thing's just rippingly fast, and other times it feels slow. I don't know what the deal with that is. I should really complain for what they charge.
Yeah.
okay. So the disadvantage, probably the reason you don't get as many signups as you think you should, is you're not telling people what's in it for them, right? There's correct. Three signs you need: a mastermind group, get advice from entrepreneurs, download a free guide. And then the other annoying thing is the way they laid this out, and I assume this is King Sumo's doing, not yours. On the right, it just says download our free guide. Our free guide to achieve what?
Yeah, that's my fault, 100%. King Sumo gives you like 50 templates to choose from, and then even then you have to type in the text that's there. So I take 100% of the blame for that not being as good as it could be.
Right, and you know, in here tell them what's in it for a mastermind group, and I love mastermind groups. So let's say accountability is the big one. You've got a group of, let's call it business therapy. You've got people you could talk to.
Yes.
Who can verify that you're not insane.
Mm-hmm.
And you get good advice from other people. You've got that collective consciousness. And really that's, you know, how I that's when the shift started, where like, you know, our growth hockey sticked was when I joined a really great mastermind group run by Nick DeSabato, Philip Morgan, and Kai Davis.
I'm on Nick's email list. Every bit of his content, I star and I save it in Gmail because it's like, I have to take time to dissect it, right? It's like, hold on, I'm skimming it like before work. It's like, what? Well, I got to come back to this at lunch.
From being in the mastermind group with him, I could promise you his sales letters he does, he will write probably a sales letter like maybe, you know, 4 or 5 times as long as what gets published, and then go through, I believe with his wife, they'll go through an editing process and just edit it down like over and over and over to get it perfect. For the emails, I think he just writes off the cuff though. And yeah. He, like, they're very personal. They'll be like, this is my favorite sandwich I've ever had.
Right.
And like the way he talks about it, you're like, I want to get that sandwich and I want to eat that sandwich with you.
Yeah, it's very like, almost like listening to a story on This American Life. It's yes. That detailed and visual. So I'm reading his story about finding this taxi in Chicago, and he and his friend, they bike around Chicago, and if they see a taxi with a number that they've never seen before, they take a picture of it and send it to the other guy.
Right.
And there was one taxi they could never find by the medallion number. And it was just such a riveting story. And of course, at the end, it's taxi 69, right? I just loved it. I laughed. I forwarded it to a couple friends because we've all got like things that we do that are similar to that. But that story was just incredibly riveting and well-written.
And it's for a business newsletter. Like, that's the important thing there. I think, you know, a lot of people starting out, and I know I fell victim to this too, was people are very scared to just to open up. Like, yes. You know, I spent 7 years in higher education, and it took a long time to beat that, like, academic prose out of my writing and just write naturally and write as yourself. And over time, I've made it, like, more personal, more natural. Like, one of my I do marketing automation and drip, or lead scoring. So if someone opens like X number of leads, visit pages, there's points assigned to them. When they hit a certain threshold, they get marked as a lead, and automatically it sends an email off to them inviting them to do a paid consulting call with me.
Okay.
And in it, I've got like, I'm trying to sell them on a high-priced business consulting call. In that email, I have a thing that says, I promise it won't be anything like going to the dentist. And then I've got a screenshot from Little Shop of Horrors in there, like, and it works. People sign up, so it's important to be. But when you open up and be personal, it makes you real.
Right. Interesting. I've had that struggle because, you know, like the blog posts I have up there, there's nothing personal about them, right? I have exactly 6 blog posts I'm sitting here staring at in my I use Draftin to write because. Yeah. I enjoy writing in just a really simple text editor. And I've got all these really personal anecdotes and how I pull like business metaphors out of them. And then I think, I can't publish this.
Why? You absolutely can't.
People don't want to read about, you know, and then the funny thing.
I just told you as a man, I wept in my house because I had to go to work.
Yeah. Okay.
I tell that story all the time because it's humanizing. Like, that's what people can relate to it when you're a person, not a robot.
I struggle with it. You know, and it's not because anybody.
It's scary. It is scary to do it at first.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I have had feedback on various projects like, you know, hey, Ken, this is way too colloquial or, you know.
Really?
Yeah. And it, part of some of it's from the day job in which I deal with Fortune 100 businesses that.
And right. And they're going to be more touchy about it. But you're just a guy. And here's the other thing. People want to relate to people, not brands.
Right.
Like, this is a tip. It really helps conversions. I give it to my Shopify e-commerce stores. But so someone's about to check out. So you know they're at this point, this decision point. If you watch where they go, oftentimes before they check out, they'll go back to the about page to try and get a sense of who you are. And then they'll go check out. Well, the same is true, you know, in any business for freelancing. Like, they want to do business with a person.
Yes.
So, you know, if you include... You know, if you make it personal and you include your photo and your name and you're very upfront about who you are and what you do and make it personal, it works. And that's what we're getting. You know, that's really, I think, what you're saying about Nick's stuff, his newsletter. Like, he wrote about how they had to go find the 69 medallion. That guy prints money in his business. But he's sending emails to thousands of people about, like, haha, they found the 69 medallion. It doesn't hurt him in the slightest. You like him more for it.
Right. And if somebody unsubscribes, oh, well.
Yep,
that's not a good fit.
Yeah.
That's a good point. I have gotten the feedback from potential customers saying, you know, the reason I didn't buy, this looks well and good and everything, but the reason I didn't buy is two things. One, you don't have an about page, so I don't know anything about you.
Okay.
And two, on your landing page, there's a lot of good information about why I should like a mastermind group, but there's no information about the kind of people in your program. You know, am I the first customer or am I customer 2000? What kind of businesses are in your program? Are these people that own dry cleaners or are these people like me? And these are all really, really great points of feedback. But then I go to edit my landing page or to go put up an About Us page. And I got to tell you, there's a lot of internal friction when it comes to bridging those two things. I mean, yeah.
I think your landing page is great. I'm looking at it now. It's great. And a landing page really has to do two things. The first has to sell the person. It has to say, this is what we're about. And
right.
You've got, you know, you've done that immediately. And then you have to give them, you know, what's in it for you. And you've got testimonials everywhere that really kind of explain those benefits, which I love. But then the thing you're missing is a sales letter. Like, there's no, like, if you notice, like, my sales letters, they're always closed with, like, I sign them. And I know, like, Nick does that too. He signs them. And Kai Davis does it. And Philip Morgan. All, like, any article gets, or sales letter gets signed. It's got, like, our name, signature, how to reach us, their photo. And it's to make it real and personal. And that, I think, is that's what people are telling you you're missing.
Yeah.
You just need, like, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 paragraphs closed by you where it's like, you know, here's who's running Mastermind Jam.
So it doesn't even have to be a separate page, but just...
No, I would do it right on this page at the bottom. Yeah.
Interesting.
Like, think about, you know, my, like, website rescues.com, ethcycle.com, curtelster.com, all three of them, the homepage is a sales letter.
I should look into that. I've always thought that, you know, long-form sales letters are really important when you're trying to get a higher value purchase. If you're just getting an email address, maybe a long form sales letter isn't the way to go. And when this landing page first started, all I was asking for was an email address. This was a free service. I had little intention of charging for this at the beginning.
Right. So the risk is super low for them.
Right.
So it's much easier to get them to sign up.
But then I put a price tag on it because, frankly, again,
you're providing a ton of value. If a mastermind works out, it could be extremely lucrative for these people.
And I was spending so much time thinking about this. It's like, you know, why am I
doing this? You deserve equitable compensation. You're not running a charity.
Right. And I got to say, the big thing was people weren't getting as much value out of the service for two reasons. One, the people that were signed up, all they were asked for was an email address. So they sign up, they get matched in a mastermind group, and then they don't reply. They flake. They totally flaked out.
Because it didn't cost them a thing.
No, there was no stake. So now I got two or three out of four people that are saying, hey, let's get our first meeting started. And then you get crickets from the fourth person because they're like, maybe, I don't care. So I'm like, okay, are you serious about this? Put $50 on the line. And obviously, you know, $50 isn't replacement income for me. It's just to make sure people are serious.
Right. And at the same time, like, you're working with a business. And I think, like, Rob Whaling told me this when I was putting together my Drip Profits training course. He said anything you're selling to a business is automatic, like, has value and is worth just automatically $49 minimum.
Right.
Like, that's just that is the price floor on anything that you're giving to a business that has value.
Oh, yeah. Talk about imposter syndrome. I struggled with that, putting that dollar amount on there. I talked about it a little bit on the podcast, but I toyed, like, my wife was beating me up about this because I was just going to put $5 on it. Like, you know, and she's like, what are you talking about? So I ran it by Mike Tabor, and he said exactly what you just said. And he's like, you know, I can see in some cases this being worth as much as $199 for the right match. You know, if you're matching two millionaire business owners together, why are you only charging $50?
Yeah, how much is it worth then?
Right.
Well, and at the same time, like, are you, you're the only one doing this, and B, like, what, you're not forcing anyone to do it. You're not making anyone buy from you. Like,
correct.
If I go out in the world and buy a new watch, I can go get a Casio at Walgreens for $20, or I could spend $10,000 on a Rolex.
Correct.
No one is saying, like, yeah, Rolex is expensive. No one's making you buy it.
Yeah, and interesting thing, too, is Mastermind has such a weird, it depends on the circle that you travel in, what mastermind means to you, right?
I hate that term mastermind.
Yes. So I got that advice from Heaton Shaw. We were at MicroConf. I sat Heaton down. I'm like, Heaton, should I be spending any more time thinking about this mastermind matching service I did for the conference? And he's like, first of all, masterminds are horrible. he's like, nobody gets up in the morning wanting to know about a mastermind. He's like, and it's so smarmy. It's gotten this really smarmy.
It feels like internet marketer stuff. Yeah.
Yes.
That's my issue with it too. And I love mastermind groups, and I'm embarrassed to, I'm like, oh, I'm in this great mastermind group. And they're like, you're what?
Yeah, exactly. You've bought into that. Are you going to sell me Amway now?
Yeah. I mean, that's like, they're great. And it certainly worked out for the internet marketers, but no one wants to be those guys.
Yeah. And if you look around as to what people are calling a mastermind group, maybe it's a masterclass. Maybe, you know, it's not really a mastermind group in the sense that we're talking about it in. So I struggle with that. And, you know, obviously I don't want to reinvent a new term for it because that's a struggle I don't want to embark on. But it's also, I have an uphill battle with that. Some people just arrive at the site saying, and they, you know, just an immediate eye roll. Like, oh boy, here we go. And
they're not your customers.
Correct. And there's a lot of big names out there that are selling masterminds. And then you get into it, and it's really, they've just sold you a Facebook group where you can go in and talk to other people about your business, which is something. I don't know that I'd call it a mastermind group. So there's a lot of different approaches to this in the business. Nobody's really done it like I've done it yet.
I think part of your issue and the issue in general is education. So probably on this landing page, you want to give a working example where you say, here's what you're going to do in a mastermind group. Here's how it's going to work. And that's after you explain to them what they get out of it.
Right.
And I've noticed, like, probably the best thing, the single thing is get actionable feedback that can help you grow your business. And then, but you've got that actually buried further down the page.
I do.
It's past the fold. I don't want to admit that the fold is a thing, but
most of these, most of the what you see there is, I have redesigned this once, and basically it was when I changed the layout of those testimonials from experts in the middle. Most of everything you see, all the copy was written sitting in a seminar at MicroConf, right? So I'm sitting there typing.
I was behind you and I watched it. I saw it happen.
So you watch it unfold. At the time I was using ClickFunnels, and then I just made I transitioned to a WordPress theme that did it a little differently. But yeah, so you're right. I could revisit how I position some of the text on that landing page, and adding a sales letter feel to it. I haven't given more thought to that since I added the price. And you're right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, they want to know, like, who am I giving $50 to, and what's going to happen next?
Right.
And yeah, after you've sold them on it, then you have to minimize risk for them. And you've done that. You've got the money back guarantee.
Yeah. Well, and another, I got feedback from one person that saw that $50 thing. They clicked on, get me into a mastermind group. They get the email that's a welcome. It's a medium sales letter that at the bottom it says, okay, here's your personal link to get started. And if they don't click that link, then they're on my drip email campaign that nags them every few days. And basically, I nag them until they either unsubscribe or they sign up, right? But
which makes sense. I mean, go ahead, hassle them until they make a decision.
Right.
You don't have to say yes, just make a decision.
Yeah, it could be they got distracted. Steli FD gives us advice that, you know, don't assume right. that they don't like you because they didn't, you know, take action immediately.
Yeah, that was a good one. You know, I used to think that too. I'm like, oh, they're ignoring me because they hate me and I blew it. It's like, no, people are busy. They got stuff to do and maybe you're just not that important to them.
Right. Yeah. Especially, you know, I've got 5 kids and a house and a wife and, you know, day job and
yeah, it's stuff, real easy to fall behind.
Yeah, stuff slips through the cracks. And so anyway, after you click the link on the page, I think I'm pretty clear that it's you got to pay $49. And then in the next email, it says, what's your investment? It says, well, today you're investing this much. And that means that you're serious about, you know, taking the next step in your business, blah, blah, blah. And if that's all well and good, click this link. And then you go through this. I use Typeform as my onboarding.
And you Typeform is very fancy.
Yeah. And so
maybe
you go through
fancy.
Well, I like the fact that you build momentum as you're doing it. So yeah. It's really easy to get them started. Whereas if I see a Google form with 20 questions on it and I scroll down,
like,
and
it's fuck this.
Yeah. It's like, ah, but with Typeform, you know, it's just like, oh, this is an easy question. What's my first name? Great. And suddenly you've got a little invested in, I find that the completion rates are pretty high on it. And then at the end it says, okay, to submit your form, we just need your payment. And then I got one person that just, I got 4 emails from this person complaining about what a bad bait and switch that was. It's like, I thought I was pretty upfront about this.
Speaking of crazies and bait and switch, yeah. I had a guy who emailed me. He emailed me. He wanted something that was like way off base to what I do. Okay. And I said, you know, no, I don't do that. Like, no, you're not a good fit. And here's a referral. And this is like probably what I would budget if you're going with them. And I shouldn't have done that.
Oh.
Because he came back. He's like, oh, nice bait and switch. It says one thing on your website, and then you email me, and I'm like, I gotta go talk to someone else because it costs more. You just sell used cars too? Like, what? Like, you don't have to be rude.
Yeah, they got personal quick.
Oh, and he's because I just happened to be sitting at my computer at the time with inbox 0 when it popped up, and I was like, no, that's not gonna work.
Yeah.
And I use canned responses and email templates, so it's just like decline, send. So of course he got an email back within 60 seconds. So I replied, and I was like, I'm like, I promise I'm a real person. Sorry for the confusion. I was sitting at my computer. I saw your email, and I replied right away. I'm like, it's not a bait and switch. You know, you could go, like, I get nothing out of this if you go work with someone else. Yeah.
And usually I try to get the customer emails really quick.
And why shouldn't you? This case, the guy's punishing me for it.
Yeah. Well, in the last 4 weeks, I've taken some vacations with my family.
And good for you.
I get
Most
back.
People don't.
I haven't for a while, right? So I get back and there's an email from one person. Within 15 minutes, they had sent me 3 emails. Like, why aren't you getting back to me?
Wow. Yeah. So automatically, you know, you don't want them as a customer.
Right.
No, thank you.
It's like, you know, the total commitment is $50. Full refund. If you don't want to do it, just don't do it. And it's not like a life-threatening thing. It's not like a hosting service I'm running where if I don't get back to you right away, that means your website's down. It's just either do it or don't do it. I'll talk to you when I'm back from vacation, I guess. And, you know, here's a question for you. Do you use an out-of-office reply when you're...
I absolutely do to manage expectations.
Okay.
Yeah, even if, like, I'm going to be out of the office for a day, or maybe I just want a break, I'll use it, and it will actually... it will reduce the volume of emails I get. And it sets their expectations, like, here's when you can get a response. And then they're not annoyed that it took so long.
I think that would have solved that problem. I should have done that.
The other thing I do, I have a PS in all of my emails that just says, PS, to stay 100% productive for my clients, I only check my email twice a day and never after 5 p.m.
Yeah.
Something like that. And then that way they know, like, okay, you know, if I've emailed him like after 4, I probably shouldn't expect a response till the next day.
Yeah, your email signature is gold, by the way. I was telling you about it. You were talking about when you got started, how you started off doing a SaaS business, and then you created a consultancy.
Right.
If you were to do that today, would you have done it the same way? What would you change about the way you got started?
Oh, I absolutely would have skipped the SaaS business. Running it. I mean, it's nothing against, you know, people who start SaaS businesses. It's just, it's a much bigger risk than starting consulting. it also is potentially like much bigger payoff. Like, you're not going to sell a consulting business for $1 billion, but potentially you start Facebook and it's worth $1 billion. I think it's, you know, I'm too risk adverse for that relationship. So had I to start it over again, I would have started with consulting. And I, rather than toil with this like up and down feast or famine sales pipeline, you know, I would have started off by just diving headfirst into content marketing. So, well, I mean, the things that have been really powerful for us are the podcast is huge, blogging and email newsletters. You combine those three things and it's just like, you know, people can't help but hear about you, especially in, like, combine it with remarketing on Facebook and Google. And it's like you just become unavoidable.
Right. Well, give me a sense of the timeline. So from the day you woke up in tears and didn't want to go to work that day, were you married at the time?
No. Okay. No, actually, I'm engaged now.
Okay. So you were single at the time. What year was this? Give me a
all
ballpark
here. So 2009 is when I'm like, all right, I'm out. I'm going to go start my own thing.
Right.
Probably I would, you know, I don't know for sure, but probably it was like 2 months. I had the SaaS business started, and 10 months after that, I said, okay, let's just shift gears and do and sell websites. Let's just do design and development.
So this was all developing around 2009 through maybe 2011. You're getting a feel for moving from the SaaS to a good consulting model.
Yeah. And it was really exactly 12 months ago, I believe, that we said, okay, let's just focus on Shopify and just Shopify. And it was probably, it would be, and then like a year before that was when I was like, all right, we have to pick a niche and then let's try these two niches.
I went through a similar experience, but mine, unfortunately, was ahead of all these like .com advancements, right? So I was working at a consulting agency, a different one, and around 2001, I couldn't take anymore. It was just agency life, and everything was going wrong at this particular company. And yeah, I could have just gone out and got a different job, but
that's agencies. I mean, the turnover in agencies is insane. I don't think people realize like the boiler rooms they're getting into with agencies.
Oh, it was just, and I
especially
had been there for
like
a while.
The big ones, they're brutal.
Yeah, I was going on 3 years, and I was just like, enough. I can't do this anymore. And I didn't just up and walk out, but I was really close to it. I gave my 2 weeks and I had nothing else planned, right? But at the time, back around 2001, it was really tough to set up a SaaS site. It was really tough to take a credit card online. You had to have, you know, the merchant account and all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that stuff would be very difficult.
Yeah. And so the feast or famine of, you know, there was nobody at the time talked about remarketing. You know, all this, you know, there was no help or reporter out.
Yeah, probably didn't exist.
So every time I hear a story where somebody just like, and they started a business and then suddenly they're making a living, I beat myself up. It's like, why couldn't you keep doing that? And I have to keep realizing it was a different world.
And also, you know, hindsight's 20/20.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, if you beat yourself up over mistakes, you'll very quickly make yourself crazy.
Yeah. Well, it really wasn't mistakes. It was more like, you know, I did it for 3 years. I freelanced and the feast or famine was just brutal. And all of my customers all kind of wanted the same thing. And around the time, WordPress wasn't this big, right? I don't know if you can remember.
Massive.
Right. Now it's 24% of the internet runs on WordPress, right?
It's probably more like I'm thinking it's more like 1 in 3.
Yeah. It's nuts. And Shopify is huge, and you know,
there's 100. So they claim it's like 100-something thousand stores. And if you use a tool like Built With or Nerdy Data, you'll get like probably 110 live public stores.
Yeah,
so it's big.
Yeah, and there's platforms similar like BigCommerce or Revolution or something like that. But Shopify is clearly the leader in that space.
Of that space, yeah. It's either you're going to host it yourself because you got an IT department and use Magento, and if you're not, go to Shopify, and if you don't, you'll probably regret it.
But back in the day, if you wanted to sell stuff, you had to hire a guy like me and pay him hourly, and then he had to help you get your merchant account and then connect using some kind of authorized.net compatible API. And, you know, there was all these hurdles to setting up a business, and it was a lot more like a traditional store than it is today. So the feast or famine cycle, that was crazy, and I found a lot of my customers were wanting the same thing. So I'm like, boy, wouldn't it be great if I just built a way that people could just sign up, put their credit card in, and then start building a store using all the same hosted solution. And I had three former managers talk me out of it. I let them talk me every time I kick myself. And I'm not saying I could be WordPress or I could be Shopify. I'm just saying that there was a need for it in the marketplace. So I spent a lot of time while I was freelancing trying to build a SaaS system where people could, you know, set up a store. And you look around today and it just only makes sense that you would just go online. Oh, you want to sell something online? Great. Let me hit Google. Okay. Shopify. Cool. I can sign up today and be selling by the end of the day. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's important to remember the context of the time period you're talking about here. So yeah, there's been a lot of internet magic since then. I love how quick and easy it is to build a business these days. But like you were saying before, once it's your own business, you know, not your customer's business, but once it's your own business, there's like this paralysis that happens.
Make yourself crazy.
When you're making decisions, they're set out before you. For me, in my day job, when a customer has a whole sheet of decisions that need to be made, it's really easy for me to help them break it down. It's like, okay, what's really important? What's the one important thing that you need to concentrate on? What's your KPI? What's your, you know, but those questions for me will just make me walk away from the computer and go like play ball with the kids in the backyard, just because it's like too, you know, it's like overwhelming.
Well, that's where, you know, I know a lot of people are like, oh, don't do business partners. It's crazy. I like having business partners. Anything I do, I want someone else there with me, because you could talk through those things and have someone else hold you accountable. I mean, it's like having a business partner. It's like having a 24/7 mini mastermind.
Yeah. Well, that's the joy of having the mastermind. And frankly, the podcast is a little bit of that too, because I get listener feedback and on issues that we're facing.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right. Well, I don't want to keep you much longer, but thanks for the awesome quote that I can put on Mastermind Jam homepage.
Yeah, I know. I saw it. I saw it up there. I was like, yes.
I don't know if I told you during MicroConf. So that was on Telescope, I think. And I'm like, hey, can I quote that? And was it Telescope? Is that the name of the? Yeah, that was Telescope we were using during MicroConf. Or Telegram. Telegram.
Telegram.
Telegram. So I copied that down. I threw it on the landing page. And then I was talking to Heaton later. He's like, dude, what are you doing? Kurt was totally pulling your leg.
No.
He's just messing with you because everybody feels masterminds are smart me. And so if you remember, I came up to you.
It's like, no, no, I love masterminds and it's absolutely true.
Right. See, if you remember, I came back up to you. I'm like, I'm just confirming that this is real.
Confirm for me that you're not fucking with me.
Yeah. Just
and indeed, I was not.
Yeah. It's like, I had never thought of it from Heaton's perspective that people might think mastermind is like a smarmy thing you don't want to be associated with. It didn't occur to me, because to me, it was always really beneficial. So, I thank you for that.
Oh, my pleasure.
Well, if there's one takeaway that our listeners can get from today on how they can get started from their 9-to-5 jobs and get started on their side business, what's a great place to start?
Find the thing you're passionate about. You know, so don't do the thing you think will make money. Do the thing that you love to do, and that passion will show through when you go through and just start talking about it. Teach other people to do what you're doing. Show them what you're doing. Teach them. The passion will come through, and you will just find people trying to hire you to do it.
That's great advice. All right, man. Talk to you later.
All right. Talk to you later.
Okay, thanks. Hey, coming up on the next two episodes of the Nights and Weekends podcast, we have special guest Justin Vincent. You'll hear Justin talk to us about our businesses as we give updates on Podcast Motor and Mastermind Jam. In the episode after that, Justin sits down with us for an extended discussion to really walk us through how he's going about validating what his next business will be. Justin even has some pointed customer development questions for Craig to see if his new business can help Podcast Motor.
Did you click the link that I sent you in Skype, the little...
I did, yeah.
The editor. Do you get that? Does that make sense?
I do, yeah. No, it makes a ton of sense, yeah.
Yeah. All right, you got $100?
Yeah. Yeah.
Nicely done, sir. Nicely done. All that and more next time on the Nights and Weekends podcast.
You've been listening to the Nights and Weekends podcast. If you like the show, go leave us a review. Thanks for listening.
You hear this?